Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back.
That's right, that's
right. It's going to be us. We can drink and talk shit as much as we want. Nobody can say anything to us.
D.L. Hughley, uncut.
Hey, now it is D.L. Hughley, uncut. Of course, I am D.L. Hughley.
I'm Jasmine Sanders.
What up? It's your boy, Special K.
What is going on with Mitch McConnell's hand?
He stuck it somewhere he shouldn't have.
Literally, his hand is so black, they're going to try to suppress his vote.
Well, if you notice, it's not just one, it's two.
I don't. Well, yeah, he's getting blacker by the minute. I swear to God, he's going to have sickle cell by the time this election.
It's true. Even his mouth, the area around his mouth and everything. Shit. I don't know what's going on, but it's turning black.
He in Kentucky. He's such a black dude, he can't even read Mark Twain right now. It's crazy. On one hand, he's swearing in Supreme Court justice. The other hand, he's playing Tonk. It's fucking crazy.
It is crazy.
Grandma's hand.
I tell you what, though, the person that he's running against there, the woman, the female, the Marine that he's running against, she ain't to be played with.
I'm gonna say this. I can't wait to vote. I'm very excited about voting. I'm not excited, but I can't wait to vote, I should say. And I definitely think things are different. When Putin says, oh, no, Hunter Biden didn't do anything wrong, it looks like he's got to go, oh, this nigga don't look like he'll win.
Yeah, what you going to say now,
yeah,
Trump?
Yeah, so, I think that this last few days of Pence's, Pence's...
his team.
Team getting
all COVID
corona.
Out. That's what I call it.
And him still going to work and exposing people. And he said he has to go to work because he's an essential worker. And Mexicans are like, you too? but I think it shows the kind of callous disregard and the wanton selfishness that they've always exhibited that now literally, in a very little way, puts people's lives in real danger.
Oh, of course you can tell. The fact that reporters ask them, whenever you come out to brief us, please wear a mask.
Right.
And even now, in the midst of all of them just about getting COVID, the chief White House correspondent refuses to wear a mask.
Because they think it's weak. It's very interesting. And I owe a public apology to Jamie Harrison, the candidate for the Senate in South Carolina. I never thought that he was going to be a viable candidacy. But after I saw that debate, I realized, and, you know, the way he's fighting and the way he's articulating his vision, I have to give an apology and tell him I was wrong. He is doing so well that he has actually scared Lindsey Graham straight.
What? All Our next guest was raised in one of the leading families of the white nationalist movement. While attending a liberal arts college, he was condemned by the campus community for his beliefs, which led to him to engage with anti-racist beliefs. He is the subject of the recent book, Rising Out of Hatred, The Awakening of a Former White Nationalist. Welcome to the program, R. Derek Black.
Hey, now, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
It's weird. I'm going to say something weird. You don't look like a white supremacist. You look like Simply Red. Yeah. I want to hear it. Hold back the years. I don't
Simply
know.
Red.
You look like.
I think that's part of the problem. People always think that you can like spot them. They're everywhere.
Like they have a certain look.
Is that really the problem? People think that they look a certain way?
Yeah. I mean, you've probably seen it. People always think that like white supremacists, like they live in trailer parks, so they've got tattoos on their face or something. But, you know, there's people in every industry in the country who call themselves white nationalists, and they don't always tell their coworkers.
But the weirdest thing is it's such a moniker. No one, I don't know what is a white nationalist? What is a white supremacist?
Right. So white nationalists, I try to limit it to like the actual movement, because there are people in the country and like around the world who call themselves white nationalists.
Right.
And they know other people who are white nationalists. Their kids are babysat by other white nationalists. They marry white nationalists. And it's this social movement of people who believe that race is real and biological, and they want white people separated from everyone else, and they want only white immigration. And I think it's also important to note they're extremely anti-Semitic. They think that Jewish people are running a conspiracy around the world. And like that's the social movement of white nationalism. Which I think is different from just like racism
because it is more nuanced than I would have imagined it was, but and white supremacy is different than white nationalism.
I thought of the people I talk to, they try to like use white supremacy just to talk about like racism in the country, you know, like hiring, incarceration, the way like society treats people different because of race. Like we talk about white supremacy being that, and then white power. White nationalism, like the social movement of people who are either mainstream political or who are like violent extremists.
Right.
It's this social movement of people who are not that many of them. Like you're talking about tens of thousands of people at the most.
But it seems like so much more pervasive than that. It really does. It seems like it's everywhere. I mean, I guess I see it on Facebook. I see it, you know, on social media. I see it on the news. I see it at rallies. So it seems much more pervasive than you would tell us.
Think about it. How my family's goal before I was even born, and I got committed to it when I was a teenager. I thought this is the right thing. I tried to help them advance it. I ran for office. I won a local office, and their goal is to take people who are more subtle, who are just like they don't like immigration, or they think like black people commit crimes. Like find white people who
you mean like my neighbors, like all of my neighbors and everybody I work with.
Yeah, like white people who just kind of have some racist thoughts, and white nationalists want to find them and make them more extreme, like ramp it up, get them to buy into a whole world conspiracy, get them to start talking about race, start saying racist things, start like buying into this whole ideology.
So you basically had a concept of what it was before you had you ever met any black people when this kind of dogma was instilled? Like had you ever had any interactions with black people, or was it just something you already we're getting kind of indoctrinated with before you ever had an experience with them?
Like, all right, so both. I grew up in South Florida, so it was like a racially diverse place.
Right.
I went to a school that was mostly Hispanic up until I was in third grade.
Right.
My family pulled me out because they didn't want me to be in a school with different races in my class. I like knew people growing up, but it was never something that really I had to confront, because if I'd go and like hang out with black kids, sometimes they'd find out that my family advocated white nationalism. Well, I was like on HBO when I was 16, and they'd bring it up. They'd say like, this is messed up. And I would just say like, oh, you know, I don't want to talk about it. Can't we keep that separate?
Right.
And for most of my life up until college, people were fine with that. They would say, okay, yeah, if you don't want to talk about that, sure as hell don't want to talk about that.
But when you were a kid and you were hanging around, you know, black people or Hispanic people, did you ever see some of the things and actions that actually were completely different than what your parents taught you about black people or about Hispanic people?
My life was a bit sheltered, right? I was homeschooled to the time up until college. And so I could hang out with people. I could see them like one-on-one. And then my family had this belief that we could, you could talk to anybody, you could be friends with anybody. But then that didn't mean that the whole of society wasn't this way. That like racial stuff in the aggregate. Yeah. Like individuals.
Exception to the rule,
But millions of people, that's where all this race stuff, and it like always that, that's what my family believes.
I always get this, okay, now it seems very pervasive right now. Why do you think there is certainly this uptick in white supremacy, in white nationalism? Why do you think that it's been on the rise? I mean, obviously, since the Obama presidency till now, we've seen a steady climb, a steady increase. And I can understand it for Obama. I mean, I wouldn't agree with it, but I can understand it. But now, is under this current administration, is it that they feel a kinship? Do they feel emboldened? Do they think they're in danger? Or what would you think is the reason why it's just expanding?
Yeah. I mean, the white nationalist movement feels like their whole theory is proven true. Like, they thought that millions of people believe stuff that's a little more subtle version of what they believe. And they just need to let them say it. They just need to let them find the right politician or the right movement or the right TV show or like something that they could latch onto. And they think that Trump winning the presidency proves that. And so that's why you saw Charlottesville. It's because more people wanted to come out in March because they thought that was their moment.
So they thought they were finding a kinship with people, that they were being because you know it became so mainstream. It's like. From 4 years ago till now, there are so many things that would have been abhorrent 4 years ago that are just now, we just kind of, this is kind of what every day happens, Nance. It happens every day. And so I think we've normalized so much of this behavior that it's almost indistinguishable between what somebody who's a blatant racist and somebody who just has kind of racist views.
Yeah, that's intentional. Like, that has been what this movement has been trying to do for decades. They try to come up with ways of saying things that can go get onto mainstream TV, that people feel like not so threatened by, that people feel like they can latch onto. That's always been the goal.
I could always tell that when they released the footage from what was going on in Charlottesville, the people who were carrying the tiki torches certainly took me by surprise, because in my head, I mean, obviously thinking about racism or white supremacy or even white nationalism, I'm thinking they're going to come out, they're going to have overalls and hats. And there they were in these khakis and these button down white tops. And I was like, who the hell are these people? Right. Where did they come from? Right. It seemed like it was a movement. And since then, it's just been progressively going forward.
Yeah, I mean, if you really think about it, the people who can drive across the country to go to a rally, the people who can donate, the people who can be members of something like that, they have at least disposable income. You know, they at least have the ability to take off some vacation days so they can go drive across the country and a little bit of spare money to buy tiki torches. Like, it's not like
are they that expensive?
They are.
Only one I have in a barbecue.
500 of them.
Exactly.
I guess you get buy one get one free. What do you hope? Because you say you're not a white supremacist anymore. Is that like an alcoholic? Like, once you're an alcoholic, you're always one. You always have to. It's like kind of one day at a time thing. Is it something you always fight against, or have you truly seen that the way you view the world wasn't quite as full as it should be, and that you. Well, do you think you were wrong? Do you think the way you were raised was wrong?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm filled with a lot of shame that I didn't just grow up in a white nationalist family. I bought into it. I believed it was right. I believed my family were right. I tried to help advance it. I ran for office. I ran a radio program. Like, I did a lot of stuff up until I was 21 and I went to college. And it was this long experience over 3 years at this little college where people found out what I was doing. They found out that I was on the news. They found out that I was talking about white power. And their message was to condemn me, to say, you know, we don't want a white supremacist here. And there was a handful of people who, you know, invited me to these smaller things. And I think that combination, the having a campus community that was saying, get out of here. We want people who you are threatening to feel safe here. And then people who also at the same time are saying, how can you possibly advocate this stuff and then come to dinner here, come hang out with us? And you think that we don't belong in this country and you're going to hang out and talk? And like, years of that.
This kind of broke things down.
Yeah. I mean, so this is about 7 years ago. At the conclusion of this, I wrote this letter publicly condemning my ideology and, you know, by consequence, my family. And I've spent years since then trying to figure out what exactly am I supposed to do after that.
So what is your belief now, though? Do you believe that, that all men are created equal regardless of race? Or do you, like, how do you feel when you're in the elevator with someone black? I mean, obviously.
I know how I feel. I know how I feel about it.
Like, is there, because I don't understand the mental, like, I mean, I get that you made the switch, but when you're walking now down the street next to someone or at a restaurant with a lot of black people or Hispanic people, and your whole life you've been taught this one thing, what goes through your mind now?
Yeah, I mean, for in the early days, yeah, there was a lot of, I have been raised with this idea, you're only supposed to be around white people, only supposed to be friends with white people. That was a long time ago. Like, these days I work with anti-racists, I work with a lot of black activists, I work with Hispanic activists. I like spend a lot of years now just trying to figure out how I can be helpful in those kind of
I think you're being helpful that it's interesting. I think you're being very helpful right now. You know what's funny? All of us, like, I was raised with a mother who said, if she can't use her comb, don't bring her home. That people form, there are these places that we find these echo chambers that kind of only espouse or edify the things we believe, whether they're accepted in everyday society or not. And oftentimes, the thing you need to change is to move out of your comfort zone. And that being, if all you ever hear is these things and everybody around you regurgitates those things, of course you're going to believe it. It's the belief is a solid belief when you can have it challenged and it still makes sense in the light of day. And I think that what happens is when you have those types of belief, they just don't hold up in the light. They just don't. Like, you can't. So I think you are doing what you can. Do you believe, are your parents disappointed? They got to be, like, right? They're a little disappointed, right?
I mean, they think I'm going against everything that they believe. Like, they were already doing this for 30 years before I was born. They built this movement, and I don't have a great relationship. I don't have much of a relationship at all with them anymore. And it was not clear we were going to be able to even keep talking after I wrote this letter, like, because that was what our family was, is... Wow. White nationalists, people who build this movement and try to advance this stuff.
And okay, so what do you hope happens? What do you want out of this thing? What do you want it to look like? What do you want? Because you've lost your relationship with a family. You've basically for the majority of your life lived the way that now you're having conflict with. So that's that's pretty brave to kind of face that in itself. But what do you hope happens? With you, with the country, with people who have experiences with you, what do you think? What do you want to happen?
I mean, in my life, when I first got to the point where I don't believe this anymore, I think it's morally wrong, I think it's factually wrong, all that stuff, I just wanted to not say anything. I wanted to crawl under a rock and stop talking. And like, it was a hard choice even then to say, I've got to make a public statement. I've been publicly promoting it. I've got to publicly condemn it. And it's that kind of thing that pushes me now. I don't do that many public events. I try to make it specific. I don't just like do. I've got a day job, you know. Yeah. But I think I and everybody has a responsibility to push back, because the one thing that I really learned is that the only reason anything changes is because people speak up. Like even that little microcosm of the college community I was at, the reason anything changed was because all those people spoke up. They condemned me. They told me I was wrong. They told me I was hurting them. I was messing with their lives. And before that, nobody had.
It's amazing how benign people think this is. Yeah. Like, people think it's really, like, you'll hear people. I've heard people who I know make these arguments that I know what it means. I know it's a dog whistle. And they'll be insistent. There are people who I refuse to deal with now, because I think one of the things between Trump and the corona pandemic, I think that you've seen it was kind of stripped away, and you could just kind of see people for what they were. And I know it's like anything else. You're not all of any one thing. But I do think that doing something that you know is wrong, and saying something about it is one thing. To actually engage with the people, you would have never had a conversation with us 10 years ago, right? You wouldn't have done that, right? And now you are, and I think that you've lost a pretty substantial part of your life, and I hope the next part of it is doing something. And you don't have to like flip to the other side, but obviously, if you've had your conviction challenged and you've come away changed by them, I think that's as human as anybody ever hopes to be. Right.
Yeah. I mean, what I learned, I think the general thing that I've learned from this is that people don't change their mind because you give them the right facts. Like, I mean, that's part of it. You gotta tell them why they're wrong. But people change their mind because of some kind of community, you know? Mm. And I think you need to think about if any kind of deeply held belief, if you're asking anyone to change it, to think something different, what you're really asking them to do is to disconnect from the connections in their life,
yeah,
their friends, their family.
You're
going to
tell them their parents were lying, their way of life, yeah, was a lie? That's got to be. Was it an experience with any group of people that made you change? What the kind of was that light going off moment? Was it a football game? Was it a speech? Was it a date? Was it music? What was it?
There was no moment. There was no one moment. It was bit by bit, and I think that's how it had to be, because there was no moment where I thought, oh my God, like everything I believe is coming undone in front of me. It was piece by piece. It was, well, I don't believe this one little thing anymore, but you know, I'm still me. I still believe the whole thing together. And bit by bit by bit, over about 3 years of having conversations, talking to people, hanging out, questioning like, what do I actually believe? At the end of it is the only point where I could say, like, I think I don't believe any of this. I think I need to affirmatively say I don't believe this.
Wow.
And, well, and if there's been
that,
one
that's
moment,
very brave.
It's very brave. And then you come on here with him.
And he goes, with this nigga here? Oh, my goodness. But your name is Black,
that's
so
right,
you got
right,
so much of this shit. What was the first holiday like when they're like, "Hey, Mom, I don't believe that we should hate niggas anymore." Like,
you're
what
right.
was that like? What happened? Like, you went, you go have dinner. What happened?
The first time I went back was my dad's birthday, and my dad he created the first White Power website.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't let me in the house. Like, I showed up. And the family came out. They said, "You can't come in." And this was a few days after I said this. Like, I know, it's not that I just don't believe this. I think it's wrong, and I think people need to work against it. And my dad came out. He said, "Well, okay, if he can't come in, then I'll go out." And he and I drove to a spot by the beach in Florida where we used to go when I was younger, and just like talk things through. He thought I was completely wrong. He thought I was stupid. He thought I couldn't believe that I didn't believe this stuff anymore. But he was like, how can you come to this conclusion? Like, you've always been smart. How do you think this? And I didn't change his mind. I still haven't changed his mind, but he was the one who came out of that birthday and said, "Okay, you're still my son."
Oh, wow.
You know what? I'll tell you
what.
There, you won't maybe not change his mind. I think that you got to walk your walk and do your thing, but I guarantee you're going to change a lot of people's mind. Doing that makes it safer for other people to come out as humans. Like, it's safe to do it. I didn't quite know what to expect, and like you, I have a very kind of narrower a view of the thing. But I will tell you of things. But I'll tell you what, I think it's very brave. I'm glad that you decided to come on. And if your father won't let you come over, you can come on my house for a little while.
Yeah, you can
bit.
Come hang out with
it's
us.
It's all Black food, but you want to.
That's good.
All right, man. Thank you so much, man. Be well.
Thank you so much.
Be well.
Good luck to you.
Take care.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I Our next guest was raised in one of the leading families of the white nationalist movement. While attending a liberal arts college, he was condemned by the campus community for his beliefs, which led to him to engage with anti-racist beliefs. He is the subject of the recent book, Rising Out of Hatred, The Awakening of a Former White Nationalist. Welcome to the program, R. Derek Black.
Hey, now, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
It's weird. I'm going to say something weird. You don't look like a white supremacist. You look like Simply Red. Yeah. I want to hear it. Hold back the years. I don't know.
Simply Red. You look like. I think that's part of the problem. People always think that you can like spot them. They're everywhere.
Like they have a certain look.
Is that really the problem? People think that they look a certain way.
Yeah, I mean, you've probably seen it. People always think that like white supremacists, like they live in trailer parks, so they've got tattoos on their face or something. But you know, there's people in every industry in the country who call themselves white nationalists, and they don't always tell their coworkers.
But the weirdest thing is it's such a moniker. No one, I don't know what is a white nationalist. What is a white supremacist?
Right. So white nationalists, I try to limit it to like the actual movement, because there are people in the country and like around the world who call themselves white nationalists.
Right.
And they know other people who are white nationalists. Their kids are babysat by other white nationalists. They marry white nationalists. And it's this social movement of people who believe that race is real and biological, and they want white people separated from everyone else, and they want only white immigration. And I think it's also important to note they're extremely anti-Semitic. They think that Jewish people are running a conspiracy around the world. And like that's the social movement of white nationalism. Which I think is different from just like racism
because it is more nuanced than I would have imagined it was, but and white supremacy is different than white nationalism.
A lot of the people I talk to, they try to like use white supremacy just to talk about like racism in the country, you know, like hiring, incarceration, the way like society treats people different because of race. Like we talk about white supremacy being that, and then white power, white nationalism, like the social movement of people who are either mainstream political or who are like violent extremists.
Right.
It's this social movement of people who are not that many of them. Like you're talking about tens of thousands of people at the most.
But it seems like so much more pervasive than that. It really does. It seems like it's everywhere. I mean, I guess I see it on Facebook. I see it, you know, on social media. I see it on the news. I see it at rallies. So it seems much more pervasive than you would tell us.
Think about it. How my family's goal before I was even born, and I got committed to it when I was a teenager. I thought this is the right thing. I tried to help them advance it. I ran for office. I won a local office. And their goal is to take people who are more subtle, who are just like, they don't like immigration, or they think like black people commit crimes, like find white people who...
You mean like my neighbors, like all of my neighbors and everybody I work with.
Yeah, like white people who just kind of have some racist thoughts, and white nationalists want to find them and make them more extreme, like ramp it up, get them to buy into a whole world conspiracy, get them to start talking about race, start saying racist things, start like buying into this whole ideology.
So you basically had a concept of what it was before you had you ever met any black people when this kind of dogma was instilled? Like had you ever had any interactions with black people, or was it just something you already were getting kind of indoctrinated with before you ever had an experience with them?
Like, all right, so both. I grew up in South Florida, so it was like a racially diverse place.
Right.
I went to a school that was mostly Hispanic up until I was in third grade.
Right.
My family pulled me out because they didn't want me to be in a school with different races in my class. I like knew people growing up, but it was never something that really I had to confront, because if I'd go and like hang out with black kids, sometimes they'd find out that my family advocated white nationalism. Well, that I was like on HBO when I was 16, and they'd bring it up. They'd say like, this is messed up. And I would just say like, oh, you know, I don't want to talk about it. Can't we keep that separate?
Right.
For most of my life up until college, people were fine with that. They would say, okay, yeah, if you don't want to talk about that, sure as hell don't want to talk about that.
But when you were a kid and you were hanging around, you know, black people or Hispanic people, did you ever see some of the things and actions that actually were completely different than what your parents taught you about black people or about Hispanic people?
My life was a bit sheltered, right? I was homeschooled to the time up until college. And so I could hang out with people. I could see them like one-on-one. And then my family had this belief that you could talk to anybody. You could be friends with anybody. But then that didn't mean that the whole of society wasn't this way. That like racial stuff in the aggregate. Yeah. Like individuals.
Exception to the rule. Yeah.
But millions of people. That's where all this race stuff. And it like always that, that's seemed, what my family
believes. I always get this. Okay. Now, it seems very pervasive right now. Why do you think there is certainly this uptick in white supremacy, in white nationalism? Why do you think that it's been on the rise? I mean, obviously, since the Obama presidency till now, we've seen a steady climb, a steady increase. And I can understand it for Obama. I mean, I wouldn't agree with it, but I can understand it. But now, is under this current administration, is it that they feel a kinship? Do they feel emboldened? Do they think they're in danger? Or what would you think is the reason why it's just expanding?
Yeah. I mean, the white nationalist movement feels like their whole theory is proven true. Like, they thought that millions of people believe stuff that's a little more subtle version of what they believe. And they just need to let them say it. They just need to let them find the right politician or the right movement or the right TV show or like something that they could latch onto. And they think that Trump winning the presidency proves that. And so that's why you saw Charlottesville. It's because more people wanted to come out in March because they thought that was their moment.
So they thought they were finding a kinship with people, that they were being because, you know, it became so mainstream. It's like, from 4 years ago till now, there are so many things that would have been abhorrent 4 years ago that are just now, we just kind of, this is kind of what everyday happens. That's, it happens every day. And so I think we've normalized so much of this behavior that it's almost indistinguishable between what somebody who's a blatant racist and somebody who just has kind of racist views.
Yeah, that's intentional. Like, that has been what this movement has been trying to do for decades. They try to come up with ways of saying things that can go get onto mainstream TV, that people feel like not so threatened by, that people feel like they can latch onto. That's always been the goal.
I could always tell that when they released the footage from what was going on in Charlottesville, the people who were carrying the tiki torches certainly took me by surprise, because in my head, I mean, obviously thinking about racism or white supremacy or even white nationalism, I'm thinking they're going to come out, they're going to have overalls and hats. And there they were in these khakis and these button down white tops. And I was like, who the hell are these people? Right. Where do they come from? It seemed like it was a movement. And since then, it's just been progressively going forward.
Yeah, I mean, if you really think about it, the people who can drive across the country to go to a rally, the people who can donate, the people who can be members of something like that, they have at least disposable income. You know, they at least have the ability to take off some vacation days so they can go drive across the country and a little bit of spare money to buy tiki torches. Like, it's not like...
Are they that expensive?
They are.
Never.
They're not cheap.
Only when I have a barbecue.
500 of them.
Exactly.
I guess you get buy one, get one free. What do you hope? Because you say you're not a white supremacist anymore. Is that like an alcoholic? Like, once you're an alcoholic, you're always one. You always have to. It's like kind of one day at a time thing. Is it something you always fight against, or have you truly seen that the way you view the world wasn't quite as full as it should be, and that you were, do you think you were wrong? Do you think the way you were raised was wrong?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm filled with a lot of shame that I didn't just grow up in a white nationalist family. I bought into it. I believed it was right. I believed my family were right. I tried to help advance it. I ran for office. I ran a radio program. Like, I did a lot of stuff up until I was 21 and I went to college. And it was this long experience over 3 years at this little college where people found out what I was doing. They found out that I was on the news. They found out that I was talking about white power. And their message was to condemn me, to say, you know, we don't want a white supremacist here. And there was a handful of people who, you know, invited me to these smaller things. And I think that combination, the having a campus community that was saying, get out of here, we want people who you are threatening to feel safe here. And then people who also at the same time are saying, how can you possibly advocate this stuff and then come to dinner here, come hang out with us? And you think that we don't belong in this country and you're going to hang out and talk? And like, years of that.
Just kind of broke things down.
Yeah. I mean, so this is about 7 years ago. At the conclusion of this, I wrote this letter publicly condemning my ideology and, you know, by consequence, my family. And I've spent years since then trying to figure out what exactly am I supposed to do after that.
So what is your belief now, though? Do you believe that, that all men are created equal regardless of race? Or do you, like, how do you feel when you're in the elevator with someone black? I mean, obviously.
I know how I feel. I know how I feel about it.
Like, is there, because I don't understand the mental, like, I mean, I get that you made the switch, but when you're walking now down the street next to someone or at a restaurant with a lot of black people or Hispanic people, and your whole life you've been taught this one thing, what goes through your mind now?
Yeah. I mean, for in the early days, yeah, there was a lot of, I have been raised with this idea, you're only supposed to be around white people, you're only supposed to be friends with white people. That was a long time ago. Like, these days, I work with anti-racists, I work with a lot of black activists, I work with Hispanic activists. I, like, spent a lot of years now just trying to figure out how I can be helpful in those kind of
I think you're being helpful now. Yeah. I think that it's interesting. I think you're being very helpful right now. You know what's funny? All of us, like, I was raised with a mother who said, if she can't use her comb, don't bring her home. That people form... There are these places that we find these echo chambers that kind of only espouse or edify the things we believe, whether they're accepted in everyday society or not. And oftentimes, the thing you need to change is to move out of your comfort zone. And that being, if all you ever hear is these things and everybody around you regurgitates those things, of course you're going to believe it. It's the belief is a solid belief when you can have it challenged and it still makes sense in the light of day. And I think that what happens is when you have those types of belief, they just don't hold up in the light. They just don't. Like, you can't. So I think you are doing what you can. Do you believe, are your parents disappointed? They got to be, like, right? They're a little disappointed, right?
I mean, they think I'm going against everything that they believe. Like, they were already doing this for 30 years before I was born. They built this movement, and I don't have a great relationship. I don't have much of a relationship at all with them anymore. And it was not clear we were going to be able to even keep talking after I wrote this letter, like, because that was what our family was, is... Wow. White nationalists, people who build this movement and try to advance this stuff.
And okay, so what do you hope happens? What do you want out of this thing? What do you want it to look like? What do you want? Because you've lost your relationship with a family. You've basically for the majority of your life lived a way that now you're having conflict with. So that's that's pretty brave to kind of face that in itself. But what do you hope happens? With you, with the country, with people who have experiences with you, what do you think? What do you want to happen?
I mean, in my life, when I first got to the point where I don't believe this anymore, I think it's morally wrong, I think it's factually wrong, all that stuff, I just wanted to not say anything. I wanted to crawl under a rock and stop talking. And like, it was a hard choice even then to say, I've got to make a public statement. I've been publicly promoting it. I've got to publicly condemn it. And it's that kind of thing that pushes me now. I don't do that many public events. I try to make it specific. I don't just I've got a day job, you know?
Yeah.
But I think I and everybody has a responsibility to push back, because the one thing that I really learned is that the only reason anything changes is because people speak up. Like, even that little microcosm of the college community I was at, the reason anything changed was because all those people spoke up. They condemned me. They told me I was wrong. They told me I was hurting them. I was messing with their lives. And before that, nobody had. People had said,
it's amazing how benign people think this is. Yeah. Like, people think it's really, like, you'll hear people. I've heard people who I know make these arguments that I know what it means. I know it's a dog whistle. And they'll be insistent. There are people who I refuse to deal with now, because I think one of the things between Trump and the corona pandemic, I think that you've seen it was kind of stripped away, and you could just kind of see people for what they were. And I know it's like anything else. You're not all of any one thing. But I do think that doing something that you know is wrong, And saying something about it is one thing. To actually engage with the people, you'd have never had a conversation with us 10 years ago, right? You wouldn't have done that, right? And now you are, and I think that you've lost a pretty substantial part of your life, and I hope the next part of it is doing something. And you don't have to, like, flip to the other side, but obviously, if you've had your conviction challenged and you've come away changed by them, I think that's as human as anybody ever hopes to be. Right.
Yeah. I mean, what I learned, I think the general thing that I've learned from this is that people don't change their mind because you give them the right facts. Like, I mean, that's part of it. You gotta tell them why they're wrong. But people change their mind because of some kind of community, you know? Mm. And I think you need to think about if any kind of deeply held belief, if you're asking anyone to change it, to think something different, what you're really asking them to do is to disconnect from the connections in their life,
yeah.
their friends, their family.
You're going to tell them their parents were lying, their way of life yeah. was a lie? That's got to be. Was it an experience with any group of people that made you change? What the kind of was that light going off moment? Was it a football game? Was it a speech? Was it a date? Was it music? What was it?
There was no moment. There was no one moment. It was bit by bit, and I think that's how it had to be, because there was no moment where I thought, oh my God, like everything I believe is coming undone in front of me. It was piece by piece. It was, well, I don't believe this one little thing anymore, but you know, I'm still me. I still believe the whole thing together. And bit by bit by bit, over about 3 years of having conversations, talking to people, hanging out, questioning like, what do I actually believe? At the end of it is the only point where I could say like, I think I don't believe any of this. I think I need to affirmatively say I don't believe this.
Wow. And
if courageous there had been
that,
one
that's
moment,
very brave.
It's very brave. And then you come
moment,
on here with him.
And he goes, with this nigga here? Oh, my goodness. But your name is Black,
that's
so
right.
You got
like,
so much of this. What was the first holiday like when they're like, "Hey, Mom, I don't believe that we should hate niggas anymore." Like,
right.
What was that like? What happened? Like, you went, you go have dinner. What happened?
The first time I went back was my dad's birthday, and my dad he created the first White Power website.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't let me in the house. Like I showed up. And the family came out, they said, you can't come in. And this was a few days after I said this, like, I know, it's not that I just don't believe this. I think it's wrong. And I think people need to work against it. And my dad came out, he said, well, okay, if he can't come in, then I'll go out. And he and I drove to a spot by the beach in Florida where we used to go when I was younger. And it was like, talk things through. He thought I was completely wrong. He thought I was stupid. He thought I couldn't believe that I didn't believe this stuff anymore. But he was like, how can you come to this conclusion? Like, you've always been smart. How do you think this? And I didn't change his mind. I still haven't changed his mind, but he was the one who came out of that birthday and said, okay, I still, you're still my son.
Oh, wow.
You know what? I tell you
wow.
what, there, you won't maybe not change his mind. I think that you got to walk your walk and do your thing, but I guarantee you're going to change a lot of people's mind. You doing that makes it safer for other people to come out as humans. Like it's safe to do it. I didn't quite know what to expect, and you know, and like you, I have a very kind of narrower a view of the thing. But I will tell you of things. But I'll tell you what, I think it's very brave. I'm glad that you decided to come on.
Me
and
too.
If your father won't let you come over, you can come over my house for a little
yeah,
while.
Yeah, you can come hang out with
it's
us.
It's all Black food, but you want to.
That's good.
All right, man. Thank you so much, man. Be well.
Thank you so much.
Be well.
Good luck to you.
Take care.
Take care.